Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a very informative docket for you today. First, the Ghislaine Maxwell trial update. Victim number two testifies. Next, Josh Duggar, rhymes with hugger. Well, his family friend, lifelong family friend, testifies against him today. Jussie Smollett takes the stand in his own defense. Let's talk about those Michigan parents. Involuntary manslaughter? Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to work. A couple of troubling cases in Florida and California. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. It is December 6th, 2021. Before we get to the docket, a couple of house cleaning administrative things. First, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button and hit that little bell so you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. I'm telling you, that little bell makes a difference. Next, our Tuesday night live show tomorrow night. It's going to get postponed to Wednesday. Don't like doing it, but unfortunately, because of some scheduling issues of having to be scattered about the state, just not going to work out well for everyone. So we're going to do Wednesday, same time, 6 p.m. Mountain Time. All right. Also, let's talk about some people that help support Crime Talk, and that's Crime Talk Prep. All right. Please go to crimetalkprep.com. All right. We've all seen supply chain shortages. We've all heard about new variants coming our way. And nobody seems to know really what is going on. Is it going to be a big deal? Not a big deal. My general experience, if people say don't panic, that's the time to panic. If they say everything panic, the hurricane is coming, you probably don't have to panic. But the point is they usually get it wrong. So the bottom line is you need to be prepared. So go to crimetalkprep.com, get yourself a 3-month food supply kit, $100 off by going to crimetalkprep.com. All right. Now here's the thing. You don't need necessarily to get the 3 months. You can buy less. You can buy more. They send me a summary of what people have bought, and the amounts that some people buy are absolutely incredible. You don't have to buy 2 years worth, but if somebody wants to, guess what? They'll sell it to you. All right. If you only need a couple of days, guess what? They'll sell it to you. But go to crimetalkprep.com. Be prepared, okay? It is your survival insurance policy, one that you can eat. All right, let's get to the docket. It's been day 6 of the Ghislaine Maxwell trial, and the witness going by the pseudonym Kate has taken the stand. Now, Kate claims that she was 17 when she was introduced to Maxwell by a boyfriend on a trip to Paris. She is not one of the 4 women in the Maxwell case where there's, named as a victim, but instead she's been called by the prosecution for what they've called 404B evidence. Now, the judge told them they cannot use this as basically propensity evidence, right? Every defendant has a right to be tried on these charges and these charges alone. Well, 404B evidence is kind of propensity evidence, but we have to bring it in for a specific purpose. Motive, absence of mistake, modus operandi, very limited purpose. And the judge will usually give an instruction both before that testimony and after that testimony stating what limited purpose that it can be used for. It'll also be in the jury instruction saying you've heard testimony from certain witnesses that can only be used to consider this information. I hate 404B evidence because my general philosophy, and I've talked about this in the Josh Duggar case, is, hey, if the government's got such a great case, what do you need to bring all this other stuff in? All it does is create appellate issues. But hey, the prosecution under the law has a right to bring it if they want to. I always think, hey, great for me as a defense attorney, you're creating appellate issues if you get it wrong. All right, so it's alleged that Ms. Maxwell allegedly introduced Kate to that man named Jeff. That's right, we don't use his last name. Why? Because all of the censors at YouTube will shut us down. For some reason, that name is blocked. So for all those people who say, that man named Jeff, who's he? You know who he is. We just go by Jeff. All right. So anyway, that man named Jeff and Kate, quoting Miss Maxwell, telling her that he was a philanthropist and he liked to help young people. Well, Kate said that Miss Maxwell invited her to their townhouse in Bellagravia and told her that the man named Jeff's massage therapist canceled on them. And then Kate testified that she was not a massage therapist at the time. And Miss Maxwell asked Kate to step in and locked her in a room with a naked man named Jeff. Kate also testified that Jeff initiated sexual contact with her. And Kate said that Miss Maxwell praised her after doing such a great job. Kate also testified that Miss Maxwell would tell her to find somebody that could give Jeff sexual pleasure, so to speak. One of the reasons why this did not come in as evidence is because Kate was over the age of consent in the relevant jurisdictions where all these alleged acts supposedly took place. And as we stated before, the judge gives instruction. In this case, Judge Nathan instructed the jury that she is not one of the alleged victims, and the judge said the jury cannot convict Miss Maxwell based upon Kate's evidence and cannot use it for assessing Maxwell's character. The jury can only use it for things that are relevant to the issue before you. That's, as I said, limited in scope to modus operandi, pattern, scheme. Basically, how you lay the groundwork every time. This is just the way you do it. All right, testimony continued that the man named Jeff's dark green foldable massage table was assembled in front of the jury as well. Miss Maxwell showed no emotion. And on her 18th birthday, Kate testified that she received a Prada bag from Miss Maxwell. She said this happened after having sex with that man named Jeff. And she testified that Miss Maxwell often told her, "Did you have fun? You're such a good girl." Kate also went on in her testimony and said that she traveled to that man named Jeff's Palm Beach mansion where she was given schoolgirl outfits to wear with a short skirt, white panties, and white socks. When asked why she put on the schoolgirl outfit, Kate testified that she wasn't sure if she said no, if she would have to leave, or what the consequences there would be for not doing it. Testimony also came out that schoolgirl costumes were found on the same floor of the house where the massage table were found where alleged underage girls were abused. Kate testified that she, in fact, visited that guy named Jeff's private island when she was a little older. At the island, she said, "I remember seeing a blonde, slim girl who she seemed far younger than me at the time," and she said she was very young. Now, as you may recall, during opening statements, the defense for Miss Maxwell tried to discredit all four of the accusers. Now, Kate has admitted that she was ambitious. She led a jet-setter lifestyle. And before meeting Ghislaine and that man named Jeff, she was in a relationship with a man twice her age, a former Oxford classmate of Ghislaine, and a friend of Ghislaine, a prominent older British gentleman. Now, Kate concedes that she abused cocaine, alcohol, and sleeping pills, a fact that the defense will introduce on cross-examination, which goes directly to her memory. Now, remember, as you may recall, the theme throughout this is memory, manipulation, and money. The defense is going to argue and ask the jury to consider the case through the prism of the memory, money, and manipulation. On cross-examination, Kate hadn't always spoken anonymously. She went public during court proceedings for the man named Jeff and a subsequent TV appearance with other alleged victims. The defense introduced emails showing that Kate corresponded with that guy named Jeff even when he was incarcerated. One of the emails was signed "Best, Love Always," and the witness agreed that Kate acknowledged that her contact with that guy named Jeff continued into her 30s, but ended when she was given birth to her first child. Now, Maxwell's lawyers also tried to undermine her credibility by describing the money, the settlement that they have all received from the guy named Jeff's compensation fund. That's right. Kate said that she entered into a $3.25 million settlement. A portion obviously went to her attorney for all the hard work that they do. But the reality of it is, what do you got? Memory manipulation money based upon drug use and abuse, and somebody that was basically along for the ride and enjoyed it as long as they were getting paid. And oh, when they saw an opportunity to get more money, $3.25 million, they went for it. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. You don't hear about that on the evening news now, do you? No, you don't. Very, very little. guess what? That's why we have trials. Kind of like the whole thing of why you play a game on, you know, Saturday or Sunday in college football and professional football on Sundays, right? Because anything can happen. You just never know. All right, let's get to old Josh Duggar. Lifelong Duggar family friend Bobby Holt took the stand and broke down in tears as she described how Josh Duggar, rhymes with hugger, confessed to his in his teens how he had inappropriately touched his sisters. Now, Holt's eldest daughter was going on a chaperone date with Mr. Duggar, and the two families hoped that basically the children would someday marry. She recalled being asked to come over to the Duggar's household for an emergency meeting back on March 30th of 2003 when Josh was just 15 years old. Now, she testified that he had Jane Doe on his lap during a Bible time, and he touched her private area, her breast area, and her bottom area, according to Ms. Holt, adding that the girl was just 5 years old. She continued in her testimony, he ended up confessing that on and off, since he was 12 years old at the time, he would touch Jane Doe 1 and Jane Doe 2 and Jane Doe 3. Ms. Holt also told the jurors that her daughter's courtship with Josh Duggar was immediately called off, and Josh was taken by her husband and Jim Bob to a facility for troubled youth. Ms. Holt further said that she asked Duggar if he had merely touched his sister's privates or whether he had penetrated her with a finger. He said both, she recalled, struggling to continue as she fought tears. Now, Ms. Holt told the court she had been approached multiple times and even offered money over the years to talk about the abuse scandal, but had refused on every occasion before the prosecution asked for her cooperation. Josh's wife, Anna, who sat a few yards away in the public gallery, where she was hugged afterwards by her sister, Jess, and other Duggar family members. Now, Jill Duggar's husband, Derek Dillard, was in the courtroom observing last week. However, she is yet to make an appearance. That, ladies and gentlemen, is what you refer to as a bad day in court. Sometimes when you have a case that you know is not great, you maybe got a small chance of winning, and the first couple days things go okay, but then they just start piling it on. And when you have a family friend who's upset, who refused to talk about this over the years until basically subpoenaed by the prosecution, saying you get all this bad information that Mr. Duggar, rhymes with hugger, admitted to assaulting a 5-year-old, okay? That just shows you something's not wired right, and you don't just fix that one day and say, oh, I went to a treatment center, I'm fixed. You just don't do it. Doesn't happen that way, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see if Josh will take the stand in his own defense. Obviously, he has a constitutional right not to testify, and a jury would be instructed they could not use his silence against him in any way. Well, Jussie Smollett was advised of that as well, but he decided to take the witness stand today in his trial. So the prosecution rested last week, and the defense began calling witnesses. And then the defense called a few witnesses, basically a security guard who was working in the area, in regards to this attack that occurred back in January of 2019. Now, on the witness stand, the security guard, a guy by the name of Anthony Moore, said that around the time of the alleged assault, he saw a person on the ground at the end of the block and the two men running, one of whom was white. Moore said he told the police what he saw, but when he was later questioned by the special prosecutor, he felt pressured to change his story. Now, Moore testified that he signed a statement that said the person was possibly a black man, but that he felt pressure and threatened to put something out there that I didn't see. Now, under cross-examination by the special prosecutor, Moore said he only saw the man for 1 or 2 seconds. Then it was Jussie Smollett's turn to take the stand in his own defense regarding the allegation that he staged this hate crime attack. Now, Mr. Smollett testified that he met one of the Nigerian brothers at a club while filming Empire, which was a TV show that obviously he was one of the stars in. He said that he used cocaine and marijuana together with one of the brothers before going to bathhouses in Boys Town, where they did more drugs and apparently kissed. Or as you may recall, one of the Nigerian brothers testified last week that he and Smollett never dated and that he didn't detect any sexual tension between the two of them. He also said that he was not gay and that he and Smollett were just friends. Smollett testified that one of the Nigerian brothers were definitely friends and that they would drive around and smoke blunts together. Jury deliberations could begin as early as tomorrow. We'll see if Jesse Smollett's testimony was persuasive that he truly was the victim of an attack or whether it was all made up. All right, let's talk about this case up in Michigan, okay? This is the case where obviously some bad things happened at the school, and we're trying not to go into it, and I'd love to get into specifics, but the reality of it is those censors at YouTube will shut us down. So if you haven't heard, the mother and father of the teen accused of going into the school and ultimately killing four classmates appeared Saturday morning during arraignment on involuntary manslaughter charges. Jennifer and James Crumbly pled not guilty to the charges. Now the couple's 15-year-old son is facing four counts of first-degree murder, terrorism, seven counts of assault with intent to commit murder in connection with the incident at the Oxford High School last Tuesday there in Michigan. He is scheduled to return to court on December 13th. Now, the prosecutors say that the parents had recently purchased the gun their son allegedly used in the shooting and that they did not take steps to address concerning behavior hours before the shooting. Now, it's alleged that a teacher spotted Ethan researching ammunition while in class on Monday, the day before the shooting. It's alleged that that teacher then telephoned and emailed his mother, who didn't reply but did text her son, "Laugh out loud, I'm not mad at you. You have to learn not to get caught." Well, the teen parents were immediately summoned to school the following morning when a teacher saw a note the boy had written that alarmed her to the point she took a picture of it on her cell phone. The note included an illustration of somebody with a firearm and a bullet with the words, "The thoughts won't stop. Help me," and "blood everywhere." This is all according to the teacher. Now, the Crumleys were told to get their son into counseling, but they refused to take him home and insisted that he should return to class. Shortly afterwards, he began the massacre. Now, deputies made arrangements with the Crumleys' attorney for them to turn themselves in at 2 p.m. on Friday with an arraignment set at 4 p.m. They didn't show, but the attorneys representing the couple say that they were not on the run. The couple was arrested early Saturday morning in the basement of a commercial building in Detroit near where their vehicle was located. The sheriff says that we believe that they were assisted in that location. Now, the Detroit artist whose studio harbored the couple while they were hiding from the police said through his lawyer that he has a friendly relationship with the couple, but was unaware that they'd been charged with involuntary manslaughter when they came to him for safety. The artist is not being charged with the crime at this time. Jennifer and James Crumley are scheduled to return to court on December 13th. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Under Michigan law, involuntary manslaughter is punishable by not more than 15 years in prison. That's quite a chunk of time. A fine of $7,500 or both at the discretion of the court. Now, Crumley's parents, it's alleged, unintentionally caused the death of four victims of the shooting. So to make sure we get it completely accurate, what do? That's right. We go directly to the law. So here is the Michigan model criminal jury instruction, which the judge would turn to, as well as the prosecutor and the defense, decide what has to be proven. And it would state the defendant is charged with the crime of involuntary manslaughter. To prove this charge, the prosecutor must prove each of the following elements beyond a reasonable doubt. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, beyond a reasonable doubt is not a vague, imaginary, speculative doubt, but a doubt that would cause people to pause in matters of great importance. So the second element, first, that the defendant caused the death, and then you put the name of the deceased in there, that is, the name of the deceased, died as a result of the act by the defendant. And then they would put in using gross negligence, okay? What is the definition of gross negligence? Gross negligence under the Michigan statutes, and the jury instruction 16.18, gross negligence means more than carelessness. It means a willful disregard, the result to others that might follow from an act or failure to act. In order to find that the defendant was grossly negligent, you must find each of the following things beyond a reasonable doubt. First, that the defendant knew of the danger to another, that is, that he or she knew there was a situation that required him or her to take ordinary care to avoid injuring another. Second, that the defendant could have avoided injuring another by using ordinary care. Third, that the defendant failed to use ordinary care to prevent injuring another when, to a reasonable person, it must have been apparent that the result was likely to be serious injury. Okay, that's a big definition, ladies and gentlemen. But what does that really mean? You basically have to know that something was going to happen and you failed to act. Gross negligence, a grave deviation from a standard of care. Okay, but what is the issue here, ladies and gentlemen? If there was such a grave fear that something was going to take place, then the police should have been called immediately by the school. It wasn't. I'm speculating that the conversation in the counselor's office was, hey, we got this concerning picture. The words, the drawing scares everybody. Oh, I was just drawing it, had a bad day, whatever. You know what I'm saying? They dismissed it. The schools didn't call the police. So why should the parents have done that as well? I get it. These type of cases are very emotional. People want other people to be held accountable for, let's face it, it's a massacre, right? A completely unnecessary massacre. But you have to look at the law, okay? Is young Ethan going to prison for the rest of his life? I think the odds are very highly likely. Of course, we'll give him the presumption of innocence. Who knows what his defense may be? But the reality of it is, if he's convicted, he's never getting out of prison. And I just don't get why people do these types of massacres, okay? Seriously. It is probably one of the most cowardice things that you can do, right? You go into an area where no one else is armed and you basically start plucking people off, so to speak, okay? How cowardly can you be? If you had any guts whatsoever, why don't you go into, you know, go to the police station and try that? Why? Because they knew that it wouldn't last very long. And guess what? The police would shoot back. People don't go and start shooting at gun shops. Why? Because all the gun people are armed. These cowards don't want anyone to shoot back. It's that simple, ladies and gentlemen. And that's what they are absolute cowards. However, we'll see what evidence comes out. I'm a little skeptical. It doesn't take much to, you know, charge somebody in a case, but I'm not sure this charge is going to stick. I don't know. I think the prosecutors may be forced to charge somebody at the school because if this was such an imminent and obvious danger, why didn't the school react? You can't just blame the parents. And buying somebody a gun that apparently is locked up and that the, you know, kid took without permission of the parents, unless there's some information that the parents knew or encouraged him to take that firearm, I just do not see how that charge is going to hold up. We'll wait and see. My opinion may change based upon new evidence, but color me skeptical. All right, next on the docket, a couple of disturbing cases, the first from Florida and then the next one from California. All right, authorities in Jacksonville, Florida have arrested a man accused of torturing and murdering a 30-year-old mother back in November. Investigators allege that Chelsea Nicole Thompson was killed by Henry Lannan II. He's 37 years old. And the arrest warrant alleged a friend of Lannan's called police on November 16th and allegedly said Lannan had confessed to him that he had killed a girl in Jacksonville. Now, according to the warrant, Lannan, who had been charged with felony aggravated battery and kidnapping, remained in custody without bond. It's alleged that he showed up unannounced at the friend's residence on the day after Thompson's killing. Now, the suspect allegedly told the friend he was in serious trouble, saying he'd confronted Thompson after believing she'd stolen from him. The warrant alleges Lannan told his friend he tied Thompson up and admitted to waterboarding her, smothering her with a pillow, and hitting her. The warrant also alleges that Lannan told the friend he wanted the victim to shut up, so he tortured her and that the girl begged for her life. Now, Lannan's sister found Thompson on the floor of Lannan's home and said that she was unresponsive with her ankles being bound with string. The sister attempted to do some sort of chest compressions, and Lannan allegedly told his sister to drive Thompson to the fire station. U.S. Marshals tracked Mr. Lannan to Jacksonville, Florida, in a hotel where he was ultimately arrested. Then we have this California case. A California man was arrested Saturday and charged with kidnapping and torturing his girlfriend for a month. The girlfriend was able to escape 29-year-old Saul Otrega's home, but did not immediately call the police because she feared what her boyfriend might do to her family. Now, the detectives located and found her, and she had extensive injuries over her body, including bruises and burns, and she was taken to the hospital for treatment. Now, shortly before 9 a.m. on Saturday, officers from several units arrived at Ortega's home with an arrest warrant and a search warrant. He was taken into custody without incident. Now, Ortega has been charged with kidnapping, false imprisonment, sexual assault, torture, mayhem, domestic violence, criminal threats, possession of cocaine with intent to sell, and felon in possession of a firearm. Mr. Ortega, that's right, he got a $1 million bond. Let's hope that's enough to hold him for a while. Obviously, we'll give him that presumption of innocence like we do everybody, but hey, let's use a little common sense here. Things don't look good for Mr. Ortega. And friends, I'm telling you, it is a dangerous world out there. A lot of people dating, they're meeting people online, and I've said this before, if you do not do a criminal background check on someone you are dating, you're committing dating malpractice. And we're not talking about you're going to Google somebody. No, I'm talking about doing a criminal background check. So if you go to crimetalksearch.com, that's right, you'll get an actual criminal background check. It's going to have information about criminal history, whether somebody's a registered sex offender, marital records, divorce records, property records, everything you probably want to know about somebody that they may not be volunteering, particularly if it's bad. Don't commit dating malpractice. Go to crimetalksearch.com. And next on the docket, let's announce the winner from last week. Overwhelmingly, Lauren Hunter Damon. That's right. That's the woman who accidentally shot herself in her private parts while performing on a sexual web platform called Chatterbait. I wonder if she's saying, I didn't pull the trigger. Maybe Alec Baldwin could be her expert witness. We'll have to wait and see. And we'll talk about Alec Baldwin as things go on throughout the week. I needed a couple days to process his interview, and I'm still trying to think of why any of his attorneys would have let him talk. All right. Now, our dumb criminal contestant of the day, where does it come from? It comes from our own office building. That's right. Just outside, feet away from the Crime Talk Studios. Take a look at this. Take a look at this. An unidentified woman comes walking up sometime Sunday morning and starts throwing rocks at the building, breaking glass on several windows. Unbelievable. I get a call Sunday. I come down. I take a look at it. I call the property owner, say, hey, I don't think we need to board anything up, but look at this. Why would somebody do this? Completely walking by, hey, let me just destroy this. Why? Because nobody has any respect for other people's property, right? The building owner has to get the windows fixed. Those expenses get passed on to people in the building. No respect for other people's property. I'm telling you, so many people think property crimes, there is no real victim. Yeah, well, yeah, there is. And people just need to remember. Just like your mom used to tell you when you walked into the store, keep your hands off. You look with your eyes, not your hands. Don't touch, right? If you break it, you buy it. And if you break other people's things or you steal other people's things, I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, you need to be careful because eventually people are going to get tired of their stuff being taken or broken and people are going to start doing bad things back to these people. I'm telling you, you were raised better than this, our potential unidentified dumb criminal of the day. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. As a reminder, our Tuesday Night Live and our Patreon show will go on Wednesday at the same time, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, simply because of some travel issues for work. Okay. Now, so we're at 192,000. My year-end goal is to get to 200,000, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Why? Because we get to 200,000, then we can make 500,000. If we make 500,000, we can make a million. And guess what? Scott can stop practicing law full time. All right. Just saying. That's all we're working for. So subscribe if you haven't done so. Hit that like, hit that little bell, tell a friend, have them subscribe. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.